Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 23rd day of April, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Call, and this week was the anniversary of a date sometimes simply known as 419. And one way or another, it's an historic turning point for both good and for evil, well, especially for tyranny and for freedom. First, and arguably at least once, the most important Tuesday this week was the anniversary of the shot heard round the world. Fired at Lexington and Concord Green, they began the American War for Independence. April 19th, 1775. It's also the anniversary of a whole bunch of other dates, more notorious for jackboots and tyranny. For example, the day of execution of a whole bunch of men, women, and children in their church in Waco, Texas. I certainly encourage everyone to see the late Michael McNulty's research in the Academy Award nominated, and it actually deserved it, movie Waco, The Rules of Engagement, and its two revealing sequels. It was followed 2 years later by one of the most incredible, and I do mean not believable, false flags in American history, the bombing of the Oklahoma City Murrah Building. On April the 19th, 1995, they managed to kill not only a bunch of children, but destroy incredible amounts of evidence, oh so conveniently stored there, later covered up by a fellow you may have heard of, among others, Joseph R. Biden, when he still knew just how evil what he was doing was. So, one thing's for sure, folks, it's a day to be paying attention and, yeah, watch your back, too. That being said, there are a lot of interesting stories today on both the tyranny and liberty fronts. Still, your host can't help but think the big shoe is yet to drop. Let's start, though, with this story from the criminal regime in the swamp and their continuing and increasingly successful attempts to destroy what's left of America. The decision, announced through the puppet mouthpiece of the Biden regime, to release 180 million barrels of oil that was intended to be saved for a rainy day or an emergency from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, or SPR. That's a million barrels a day for almost half a year, 180 days, and it'll end just before the midterm elections. How convenient. And the idiotic claim is, oh yeah, it's because of Russia, 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 and Putin. And that's why gasoline prices and everything else are going up at literally historic rates. So gutting that Strategic Petroleum Reserve before things really get bad is justified if it saves a few seats in a communist-controlled Congress, or at least allows them to be stolen with less questions asked. Trouble is, the American people have to actually be willing to believe that gutting the Strategic Petroleum Reserve before we really have an emergency will somehow relieve their Biden-induced pain at the pump. So they really don't want people to know this. And it actually comes via Bloomberg, Zero Hedge, and others, citing persons familiar with the matter. The Suezmax ship called Advantage Spring is sailing for Rotterdam. This according to ship tracking data that they've compiled. And it's received, get this, folks, emergency SPR sweet crude from the Netherland Oil Facility of Energy Transfer right around the first of this month for, no, not internal use in an emergency, but export. I wonder if the big guy gets 10% off the top from that one, too. The Suezmax also received SPR crude from Aframax Eagle Hatteras, which loaded at the same terminal the first week of April, chartered by Atlantic Trading, an affiliate of Total. So it seems, notes Zero Hedge, that the definition of emergency now includes making surreptitious profits at the expense of American consumers. Because when we actually have a real emergency, and Biden is certainly working hard on that front, too, by then it'll be too late. But they continue, it really does beg the question, are they intending to export a whole bunch of ballots to Europe too? But I look at this next story, maybe they won't have to. Because if the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is being gutted and then exported, at least the open borders are making sure we import a whole bunch of terrorists to make up for it. Biden's global migrant crisis says, of all places, the Daily Mail out of UK, 5,000 Ukrainians, almost 32,400 from Cuba, 5,000 from India, almost 2,000 from China. All of these were among the almost 250,000 that were stopped, not counting the ones that weren't stopped, trying to enter the U.S. in only the month of March. Why, it's gotten so bad, says the story, even some of the communists in the House are admitting the administration's border invasion may have gotten out of hand. As the regime continues their attempt to open the borders and say, come on in, we're going to lift Title 42 as well, probably give you a free phone, and about the only thing they haven't done yet, says your cynical host, we'll give you a free ghost gun when you come in too. Because real Americans aren't going to be allowed to have any of them for too much longer anyway. The story includes some charts showing that the Biden regime has already surpassed their own invasion records from last year dramatically, and it's still early, and that's even before they've eliminated Title 42. And they're also setting new records on other invasion fronts as well. For example, during just the month of March, There were almost 90,000 encounters, as they call them, by Customs and Border Patrol from wannabe illegal immigrants outside of what's called the Northern Triangle, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, and of course, Mexico. And let's not kid ourselves, folks, we certainly won't know until much later just what percentage of those turn out to be foreign undercover agents, military, or of course, other flavors of terrorists. What we know for sure, though, is that they'd be fools if they weren't taking advantage of the open borders and coming on in now, while the getting's good. There is at least some good news today, April the 19th, on the Freedom Front, courtesy of the youngest judge chosen by President Trump for a lifetime appointment to the federal bench, 33-year-old, obviously rising star, Judge Catherine Kimball Mazel, who finally did what evidently none of her colleagues had the courage or integrity to do at least a year ago. Strike down the utterly idiotic, senseless, unscientific, and tyrannical mask mandates put in place by Big Brother's tyrannical bureaucrats. And as Forbes reported, Florida federal Judge Mazel's ruling throwing out the federal government's unconstitutional mask mandate for airports, airplanes, and other public transportation on Monday, and in the process ruling that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, how's that for a laugher? Now it's the Center for Death and Control, folks, exceeded their authority, who could have thought it, by imposing the idiotic mask requirement just days after the agency had extended it for yet another 2 weeks. She declared the mask mandate was unlawful, blocked it by vacating the order, and then sent it back to the CDC, quote, for further proceedings. After which, the regime conceded that the judge's ruling indicated that their mask mandate was unlawful, and the Transportation Sexual Abuse Agency, or TSA, has announced they will not enforce, quote, its security directives and emergency amendment requiring mask use on public transportation and transportation hubs at this time. That was followed on Monday by a number of U.S. public-private partners in the airline industry, United Airlines, Delta, Alaskan, American, and Southwest, which immediately dropped all their mask requirements. And as Christina Layla pointed out in a quick piece, a lot of flight attendants were joyful about finally being able to remove their idiotic face muzzles. Here's one video captured by a passenger where the flight attendant takes off her mask for the first time in 2 full years and almost breaks down in tears as she does so.
If you would like to continue wearing your mask, please feel free to do that. We do have extras if you would like one. First time in 2 years. Oh! 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 Oh!
And ponder this, folks. That was a reaction from people who don't like wearing the things, but were duped into doing it anyway. Just imagine how people who wouldn't have put up with BS like that in the first place might have reacted. Or you might note that since the idiotic TSA mandate was first introduced in January 2021, there have been over 7,000 so-called unruly passenger incidents reported, 70% of them involving breaking the ridiculous mask mandates, according to the FAA. Sadly, though, as you might expect, the leftists are already squealing like stuck pigs, although some of them can't be heard anyway through their face muzzles. This is cute. In a tweet from a self-proclaimed emergency room physician that I wouldn't trust to fix a hangnail, quote, I just bought tickets for me and my wife, who's pregnant, and our unvaccinated 4-year-old child. I assumed, he wrote to United Airlines, you would continue to have a mask mandate. Now you've canceled it, and we will have to board our return flight under your new no-mask-required policy! ! Oh, thanks so much. And as the response indicated, hey, if you think they'll protect you, nothing's stopping you from wearing it anyway. But on that score, though, the obfuscation from the leftists at the Daily Mail is at least, informative. Flight Attendants Union, they say in their headline, says that confusion, over the federal mask mandates ending could lead to more fights on planes with individual airlines. Who could have imagined such a horror now left to decide whether or not to enforce, I'm going to keep putting this in here, the health jeopardizing idiocy. Still, though, they admit a whole lot of people flying Monday posted videos and photos online of now unmasked sheeple taking off their masks and applauding the ruling. Here's a story I tried my best to ignore for a lot of obvious reasons, but somehow, folks, it still says something. Rabbit to the rescue, says a headline from the Gateway Pundit. The Easter Bunny in full costume retrieves the bumbling, mumbling, stumbling, senile imposter-in-chief as he wandered off to try to talk to some children and then blocked the press from asking Biden, that's the Easter Bunny, mind you, asking Biden any questions. which led Julian Conradson to hearken back to CNN, which cried for 4 years about Trump failing to uphold the dignity of the Oval Office, writing, "The adults are back in charge." And yeah, all I can add to that is no comment. From the tyranny front, more on Monday, the Supreme Court rejected an appeal from an Air Force Reserve Lieutenant Colonel who was removed from command after refusing to take the Zyklon B injection. Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Dunn had previously been denied a religious exemption and removed from his post for refusing to get vaccinated, whereupon he filed an emergency appeal with the so-called Supreme Court, arguing, and you'd have to say, hey, anybody with half a brain knows this is true, had acquired natural immunity to the disease after getting COVID last summer. But as Fox reported, the Supreme Court rejected that emergency appeal from a man trying to serve his country, primarily because Judge Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh both sided with the court's totalitarian far-left wing. Notably, actual constitutionalist justices Alito, Gorsuch, and Clarence Thomas said they would have sided with Lieutenant Colonel Dunn. I'm going to call this a related story. You can make up your own mind. The Daily Mail, reporting on it, isn't even going to ask the question. 3 U.S. Navy sailors are found dead within 1 week in what are called unrelated incidents, and I guess that depends now, doesn't it, on the USS George Washington, as a rapid intervention psychiatric team has been deployed on board to deal with the possible trauma, they claim, of so many deaths so close together, of young, healthy people whose maybe only real connection, besides being on the same ship, is having all been forced to take the same. And no, folks, the word vaccination or anything even remotely similar to it does not appear anywhere in this piece. Zyklon B clot shot.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along. Move along.
NCIS, it says, is looking into the deaths of Retail Service Specialist 3rd Class Mikhail Sharp, Electrician 3rd Class Natasha Huffman, who were found dead on the 9th and 10th, respectively, and a third sailor found unresponsive on board the nuclear aircraft carrier whose name has not been released. Claiming that there is, quote, no initial indication to indicate that there is a correlation between these tragic events, the Navy has failed to provide any cause of death for any of the sailors. And guess what, folks? I have a strong suspicion you're almost certainly not going to hear what very well may be the real cause. But if that's even remotely true, this is not the end of the story, nor the deaths. From the city of brotherly love, a 25-year-old Philadelphia resident had his door kicked in by two men that claimed they were police officers. But then, as they tried to zip-tie his hands, they threatened to kill him. And he realized, even today, that's probably not something that real police officers ought to do. So the man who, with stories like this, always seem to take care to point out, is licensed to carry, acted to free his hands, whereupon he pulled his own gun and shot the nearest intruder wearing a fake police badge around his neck multiple times. Real police said the suspect was shot in the arm, head, and chest and pronounced dead at nearby Jefferson Torsdale Hospital. As they searched for the other suspect and have used cameras located in the neighborhood to help with the investigation, said the man to local Fox 29 TV, "I pulled out and I shot at him, and that's it." Then he added that anyone everywhere who can legally own a gun, and if we still had a constitution, that would mean you folks, ought to buy one. And you know what, folks? It irritates me that I would even have to add this next part, but I will. Police briefly detained the victim and his girlfriend, who was upstairs during the incident, but quickly released them, and no charges have been filed. It's time next to turn to the financial meltdown and economic debacle still in progress. Here's a piece from Mish Shedlock via Zero Hedge and his website called MishTalk.com, where he says, forget about a soft landing. What's going to be the shape, though, of the hard landing? He points to a Wall Street Journal article entitled Hot Economy, Rising Inflation, about four different types of landings that economies might endure. The bumpy landing, the aborted landing, the soft landing, and, of course, the hard landing. Last evidenced in the early to mid-80s, suggesting the following, that during the past 80 years, the Fed has never lowered inflation as much as it's set out to do, now at least, by 4 full percentage points, without causing a recession. Furthermore, he quotes current Fed Chairman Jerome Powell, the new Mr. Helicopter Money, who said no one expects that bringing about a soft landing will be straightforward in the current context. Very little is straightforward in the current context. And he added, the central banksters face a, quote, challenging task. Well, I guess, folks, it's a good thing they have a world war on tap. He also quotes Lael Brainard, a Fed governor awaiting Senate confirmation to become Fed vice chairwoman, who said there's plenty of room for businesses to reduce the number of job openings, adding, "I see that as being consistent both in bringing inflation down and sustaining the recovery." Sick. Well, says Mish, "I believe the soft landing proponents at both the Fed and Goldman Sachs are all in fantasy land." And so he adds, does Danielle DiMartino Booth, "I think that's why you're seeing such erratic behavior in the bond market and in the stock market. I think it's because there's so much uncertainty. The idea that any central bank can orchestrate a soft landing is disingenuous." And she went on to add, "There's no soft landing anywhere. Quote, you can't even call what we're seeing volatile anymore. You should call it violent. The types of swings we're now seeing day to day, that's because there's so much uncertainty about what the outcome of this is going to be. But," she said, "I think that anybody who suggests that the Fed can engineer a soft landing at this point, that any central bank right now can engineer a soft landing, Europe is going into recession quicker than the United States is, well, I think it's just specious, just disingenuous." And getting to his conclusion, Mish notes that on this subject, there are competing economic theories. One he calls the domino theory. That's one that your host has talked about in the past. And proponents of this one believe that things will take a while to play out, and they begin to fall one by one. But the big decline comes after a long wait. That scenario, he says, is very orderly. Well, until the final chaos. Then there's the spiral theory, which in contrast to the domino theory, suggests that things can get disorderly right from the get-go. And once the decline does start, no one will believe the Fed has anything under control. Finally, he says there's the tipping point theory. This scenario happens fast. The Fed will appear to be in control until one rate hike too many. Then the whole damn thing suddenly tips over, which happens much faster than the domino theory collapse. Oh yeah, and then let's not forget, there's the fantasy land theory, called the soft landing, which takes me to some warnings on one specific front in the coming meltdown, the food hyperinflation and famine front. Mike Adams is among those who have warned about rail carriers of late that are canceling grain shipments, and now fertilizer shipments are being halted right in time for, well, maybe not, spring planting. As you may recall, he says, 10 days ago I warned that rail carriers were declaring force majeure and halting shipments of grain to dairy herds and other cow herds across America. Yeah, look for a major dairy issue, folks. In that announcement, said Adams, I also warned this was an engineered collapse of the food supply, where rail carriers were essentially being ordered to drop certain loads in order to maximize the coming wave of food scarcity and famine. And now we have devastating news from CF Industries, one of the largest fertilizer producers in the world, confirming the engineered food collapse plan is being expanded to include fertilizer shipments. According to their April 14th announcement, just heading into the weekend, Union Pacific is halting the delivery of fertilizer shipments right in the middle of peak planting season for farmers, warning that, quote, railroad-mandated shipping reductions will result in nitrogen fertilizer shipment delays during spring application season, and that it will be unable to accept new rail sales involving UP for the foreseeable future. And even more alarmingly, CF Industries warns that, quote, it's one of only 30 companies to face these restrictions, meaning that Union Pacific is essentially dropping fertilizer shipments and grain shipments all across America, meaning, yep, America's food infrastructure is being shut down, arguably deliberately. And these implications are nothing short of catastrophic, continues Adams, because it affects not just fertilizer, but also DEF, or diesel exhaust fluid, which is something now necessary, due to mandates, it would seem, for all tractors, transportation trucks, and construction equipment, and any other machinery using diesel engines. CF Industries goes on to explain that they ship to customers via Union Pacific rail lines, primarily from their Donaldsonville complex in Louisiana and the Port Neal complex in Iowa. And these rail lines serve key agricultural areas like Iowa, Illinois, Kansas, Nebraska, Texas, and California. And products that will be affected include, but are not limited to, nitrogen fertilizers like urea and urea ammonium nitrate, as well as diesel exhaust fluid, DEF, an emissions control product required for diesel trucks. And CF Industries is the largest producer of those in North America, and its Donaldsonville complex is the largest single production facility for the products in all of North America. So, notes Adams, without DEF, you can't run tractors, and according to the Green New Deal lunatics who think that halting all diesel engines will magically make the world green, you're about to experience the starvation, chaos, and violence that comes from shutting down agriculture. Good luck to all. And as he notes, the engineered halting of fertilizer shipments appears to be timed to severely disrupt spring planting season across North America, which is consistent, of course, with what all of us have observed about the Joe Biden deliberate shutdown of America's energy infrastructure that began on day one of the fake presidency, when the puppet signed a stack of executive orders shutting down energy pipelines. And that's a path the O'Biden regime has continued ever since, as shortages and price inflation continue to gut what was left of the country. And no, it's hardly Putin's fault. Putin is the scapegoat who took the bait. The truth is that fake President Biden's trying to plunge America, continues Adams, into mass starvation, food riots, and chaos. And the shutdown of energy, food, and fertilizer transport is just one small part of that entire nefarious plan. Here he goes on to quote CF Industries President Tony Will, who reveals how fertilizer is being selectively targeted, saying, quote, "The timing of this action by Union Pacific could not have come at a worse time for farmers. Not only will the fertilizer be delayed by these shipping restrictions, but additional fertilizers needed to complete spring applications may be unable to reach farmers at all. So by placing this arbitrary restriction on just a handful of shippers, Union Pacific is jeopardizing farmers' harvest and increasing the cost of food for consumers." Unquote. CF Industries also points out that without nitrogen fertilizer, crop yields will be lower. Hey, there's a shocker. Saying that such fertilizers are critical to maximizing crop yields, and if farmers are unable to get what they need because of supply chain disruptions like rail shipping restrictions, the company expects lower yields. Maybe, suggests Adams, that's why China's been buying up grain supplies all around the world, because they know, and their puppet certainly seems to be helping, exactly what's coming. Continues the Health Ranger, if the years 20 through 21 was the COVID chapter of the intended global collapse, 2022 into 2023 is going to be the famine chapter, and a convergence of black swan events is spelling out with absolute certainty that global food scarcity and mass famine are at hand. Some of these events, he says, include the unleashing of economic sanctions against Russia, halting Russia's ability to export fertilizer and food crops like wheat. The grand solar minimum sun cycle is also producing lower levels of solar radiation that will reach the surface of the Earth over the next several years, leading to global crop failures and, historically, the fall of nations and empires. And, of course, let's not forget unbounded money printing by the Federal Reserve, leading to rapid devaluation and then collapse of the value of the fiat dollar, especially versus food, which means skyrocketing food inflation, which the UN's FAO now puts at over 12.6% month over month, meaning food prices will double at this rate of inflation every 6 months. That's a factor of 4 increase, folks, in 1 year. Let's not forget what's being done to energy with skyrocketing diesel prices, which will affect everything, not only the shipment of fuels themselves, but also foods. Michael Snyder of the Economic Collapse blog weighs in on the same subject and notes not only is there the Union Pacific debacle to worry about, but the USDA is trying to destroy the poultry industry as well. They've killed literally tens of millions of turkeys and chickens, blaming the booga 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 new bird flu pandemic. The price of a dozen eggs has literally tripled since November, while the prices of chicken meat have gone up about 30% so far. And finally, continues Mike Adams, the nutcases that are trying to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, which will actually starve food crops and devastate further global yields, because CO2 is the key nutrient that plants themselves need to grow, even more than they need nitrogen. What's that mean? Well, brace yourself, obviously, for food prices, which will continue to skyrocket, probably doubling before the end of the year 2022, and almost certainly again the next year. And as a result, you can expect food riots to break out worldwide. What will big brothers, national governments do? Yeah, you know it. Food rationing, that'll mean less food, and price controls, all of which will exacerbate the problems, not fix them. And the worldwide food insecurity will almost certainly lead to global uprising and revolutions. Nations will fall, governments will declare national emergencies, and those who haven't planned for it are intended to starve. Buy and set aside what you can while you still can. More importantly, for the longer term, be prepared to grow it and to trade for it and to have abilities within a network of, well, relatives, friends, community to help one another, because what's coming is going to be uglier than most Americans have ever even remotely begun to conceive, and I think rapidly they're beginning to wake up to it. We'll change gears when we get back. A lot more to talk about this week. Stay with us.
Did you write the book of love, and do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so.
It's a wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I am still your host, Mark Call. And I gotta be honest with you folks, the real news, the most important news, has been the same day after day for a while now. The biggest economic meltdown in American history, arguably world history too, since it's gonna take most of the planet along with it, is in progress, and it's accelerating. The fallout ranges from a currency collapse to a famine that they're working hard to extend, and I'll come back to that in a second. The United States government has been overthrown for quite a while now, but they're not even trying to hide it anymore. There's a senile idiot pretending to be dictator whose singular real goal seems to be to complete the destruction of the formerly free United States. They're lying about literally everything that matters, and oh yeah, let's not forget that in order to cover all of this up, they're more than willing to foment World War III, and that's about the only thing, besides the rest of the destruction, that they're doing a blankety-blankin' good job of. So I'm going to start, well, briefly anyway, with two stories that I think really set the stage. Here's one. The headline gets it. Biden says it's questionable whether or not Russia actually controls Mariupol, as they claim. Well, folks, it's questionable whether Biden is in control of any of his faculties, as at least some people are still trying to get you to believe. I follow that up with a headline from the spokeslayer for the regime, Jennifer Psaki. Remember, as in P-resident, the P is silent, who admitted at a press briefing that forced masking on airplanes of all of the slaves that still think they have a, well, privilege anyway, to travel, is in fact about exactly what you knew it was. Power. And literally rubbing the faces of those who don't have it in it. Here's a quote. Our focus here, she said yesterday, was seeing what power we had to preserve, unquote, the force masking of you slaves on airplanes. And if you believe that it's all about your health, yeah, sure. You may even believe the Biden puppet doesn't need a teleprompter to read his lines and doesn't have to have a staff to change his adult Pampers. And just when you thought hyperinflation might be willing to take a break, at least at the fuel pumps, oil jumps, says the Zero Hedge headline, as the second wave of the Russian oil shock begins. After sliding yesterday in what's become an increasingly bitter feud between bullish traders of physical oil and bearish hedge funds, oil on Thursday gained again as growing challenges to supply eclipsed concern about the fading threat to energy demand from lockdowns in, of all places, yeah, communist China. West Texas Intermediate traded near $103 per barrel in a week that's seen futures swing sharply over about a $10 range, where volatility is only set to keep rising, as Goldman Sachs explained last week by highlighting what they call the volatility trap. Meanwhile, the turbulence in the European Union continues. Can they reduce their dependence on Russian energy supplies, or would people prefer to stay warm and eat? Has the French election been sufficiently rigged or not, or will Le Pen manage to upset France's socialist dictatorship? Meanwhile, Bloomberg's Javier Blas writes that the lights are dimming over the Russian oil industry, with the Kremlin trying to conceal the full impact of energy sanctions after their invasion of Ukraine. Russia, he claims, is finally succumbing to the sanctions. But still, he seemed to admit that the, quote, declining Russian production levels signaled the beginning of a second and likely longer lasting wave of oil price increases. Yeah, folks, this is going to hurt you all, and it's intended to, far worse than it's going to hurt Putin or Biden. On a related front, Austrian economist and commentator Peter Schiff admits what the talking heads on TV aren't about to. Americans are earning more, but inflation, soon to be hyperinflation, is eating up any rises in their wages, and then some. Year over year, hourly wages for production and non-supervisor employees were said to be up 6.7%. Whoa, that sounds good, till you realize that inflation was a heck of a lot higher than that. And as you've known for quite a while, the truth is, those bogus inflation numbers don't even begin to tell the real story. Peter Schiff put it this way, quote, the wage numbers are real. Those are actual numbers because they're easy to measure. There's no hedonics. There's no substitution. The wage increases are accurate. It's the price increases that are not. Because if inflation is actually 17 or 18%, not 8.5%, but wages are only growing at 4 or 5%, real incomes are collapsing at an unprecedented rate. Consumer debt's rising at the fastest pace since the turn of the millennia, and now, he says, not only are savings completely gone, they've actually less savings than they had before they got that government slush fund because they spent that money on rising prices. Now, that money, too, is gone, and they're relying on credit cards to fill the gap between what they earn and what they spend. People are going to have to cut back everywhere they can, and we're already seeing aspects of this, like they're canceling their Netflix subscriptions. Maybe they want to protect their kids from the Disney Netflix pedo perv propaganda access anyway. They won't go on vacation, though, continues Schiff. They won't eat out as much, and all of this is bad news for an economy predicated on people spending, and let me put it this way again, money they don't have on things they don't need. From here, I guess we need to turn even a bit more hardcore today. I've got a couple of pieces that again make the point this is not an accident or outright stupidity writ large, or even just an unfortunate sequence of events at the worst possible time. Several very large food processing plants, says a piece from the investmentwatchblog.com, have blown up or burned down over just the past few days. They quote a number of links from Dr. Benjamin Braddock to make that point. Seven injured in an explosion, says Newsweek, as fire engulfs a plant at a food manufacturing facility in eastern Oregon, sending a number of workers to the hospital. In Idaho, a plane carrying only the pilot crashed into an Idaho potato and food processing plant. You may have heard about this one. Fire destroyed the headquarters of Azure Standard, the largest independent organic food distributor in the U.S., and there's barely any coverage of that one, in the waste stream, that is. Last week, there was a major fire at a Walmart distribution center. Likewise, recent fires at Taylor Farms and a Rio Fresh onion warehouse. And it's not just the U.S. either, says Benjamin Braddock. Last month in Taiwan, there was a massive fire at a grocery logistics center. Almost like somebody wants to make sure that when this famine hits, there won't be much food in storage either. Oh yeah, and the Big Brother-enabled carnage of chicken and turkey farms has now reached 30 states with no signs of even slowing down. And in much of the world, especially Asia, there's a major concern about coming rice shortages. Former Reagan-era budget director and economist David Stockman has weighed in with the assistance of Nick Giambruno on the inflationary hell that he says is about to break loose. He's not alone there, as you know, but Stockman makes some pretty cogent observations. It's only a matter of time before Kiev surrenders to the Russians, suggests the piece, with or without their clown car president signing any armistice. But that deal will be so onerous from the perspective of the swamp in Washington that it will not mark the end of the sanctions war, but merely an excuse for additional intensification and, of course, as desired, indefinite prolongation. Oh, yeah, and it's a great excuse for blaming what's coming on anything else other than what they see in the mirror, too. When that becomes a reality, he says, inflationary hell will break out all over the place, and the Fed's decades-long experiment in egregious inflationary money pumping will splatter ignominiously all over the Eccles building, i.e. Fed headquarters. And it now appears that commodities markets have been so drastically roiled by the action to date that Washington's war on the global trading and payment system is now open-ended and can theoretically go on for years because the Russian-loathing, Putin-demonizing socialists, a.k.a. Democrats, now in charge of policy in Washington, can't even see straight when it comes to the real issues of the conflict. There's absolutely nothing wrong, he suggests, with partitioning Ukraine and Crimea, nor with Putin's proposed new security arrangements that would have NATO move its missile bases to pre-1999 status quo and the re-garrisoning of U.S. and Western military forces in the old NATO territories. But those very plausible solutions are so far removed from the war fever now raging on the Potomac that there's no chance of Washington embracing a negotiated solution to what is now increasingly looking like World War III. He suggests it might take a historic GOP sweep of the 2024 midterms to clear the decks of the demonization here. And don't hold your breath, folks. Even if people turn out in mass to vote for anything other than what they've been getting, who says that the votes are going to be counted, honestly, history being any guide? And again, says Stockman, let's not forget, oil recently hit $130 a barrel. It'll probably be back there before long. But here's the thing. Double-digit inflation is now guaranteed. And furthermore, we know it's going to be long-lasting because the Fed is occupied by what amounts to anti-Volckers. This groupthink addicted bunch of Keynesian crackpots are clueless about the dire inflationary forces now raging. He's given them the benefit of the doubt, I think, folks. Some of us suspect that they know it, and they're just anxious to see the fires burn. Anyway, they are still buying bonds, i.e. QE, and planning only tepid 25 basis point rate increases, when actually hundreds of basis points, or percentage points at a whack, are necessary ASAP. Here, says David Stockman, is just one example. Nickel spot prices are up nearly 500%, and this is merely illustrative of the inflationary firestorm now gathering a major head of steam. Wheat prices have skyrocketed more than 60% recently after the war effectively shut off more than a third of the world's wheat supply, which ordinarily trades out of the Black Sea ports for Ukraine and Russian producers. That commodity, in turn, is used in everything from bread to cookies to noodles, and accordingly, those soaring upstream costs will rapidly work their way down the processing pipeline, that is, if the pipeline isn't burned up, folks, until maybe, if you're lucky, they arrive on grocery shelves. And when might that be, says David Stockman? Well, just in time for American consumers to be paying $6 per gallon, if they're lucky there, to be able to drive to a store and pick up an inflated priced loaf of bread. But there's far, far worse than to come. Here's an interesting one that your host can attest to personally. Verizon wireless customers across the U.S., say a number of sources, have reported they were unable to make or receive telephone calls on Wednesday. Said a Verizon spokesperson, we're aware of an issue impacting voice calls for some Verizon customers. You mean like almost everybody across the entire Rocky Mountain West? Yeah. Anyway, their engineers are engaged. They were working hard to solve it. Later, they said it had to do with a fiber issue in the core of their network that caused some customers to experience intermittent call failures, like 12 hours straight, 100%, your host will note. We apologize for any inconvenience this may have caused, and the reason I mention this is because I'm going to suggest, as the nation descends into third world communist dictatorship status, and things literally come apart at the seams, you can expect a whole lot more of this, and a whole lot worse. So prepare now. By the way, at least amateur radio communications stayed up throughout this. And your amateur radio operator host, who's taught ham classes literally for decades at this point, suggests if you haven't thought about it before, now's a good time to make sure you do. Although I frequently find things to disagree with, your host generally enjoys reading Judge Andrew P. Napolitano's comments on what's going on in the world, especially when it comes to his legal background. This week's piece is entitled, Using War to Assault Freedom. Lou Rockwell has it up, and he begins by noting that most judges and lawyers agree that the war on drugs, which turns out not to have really been a war on drugs, but on the people, using drugs as a scapegoat, anyway, over the last 50 years, he says, has seriously diminished the right to privacy guaranteed by the Fourth Amendment. Now we have a small group of legal academics arguing that the war in Ukraine should be used similarly to diminish or outright destroy property rights once guaranteed by the Fifth Amendment. So here, says Judge Napolitano, is the backstory. The Fourth Amendment was written to guarantee that the government may only search and seize persons' houses, papers, and effects pursuant to something, isn't this a quaint concept, called an actual search warrant issued by a judge after the presentation under oath of actual evidence demonstrating that the place to be searched, more likely than not, contains actual evidence of a crime, and that warrant itself must specifically describe the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. What a concept. Those requirements, the work of James Madison, who was the scrivener of the Constitution in 1787 and the author of the Bill of Rights in 1791, were intended to have, says Napolitano, two effects. The first was to uphold the quintessentially American right to be left alone. What a concept. The second was to compel the government to focus its law enforcement personnel and assets on actual crimes for which there was probable cause. And there's another amazing concept. Not on fishing expeditions or some persecutorial hunch. In Madison's language, he says, absolutely prohibited the use of general warrants, a favorite tool of the British government against the colonists. General warrants were based on whatever Big Brother King George III wanted or claimed it needed. The colonists were tormented by and then driven to revolution over general warrants as they authorized British agents to search wherever they wished and seize whatever they thought they might have found. Surely the dreadful colonial experiments with general warrants was a driving force behind the wording and subsequent ratification of of the Fourth Amendment. But sadly, during the war on drugs, prosecutors and police persuaded judges to craft what were laughably called emergency exceptions to the specific prohibitions of the Fourth Amendment. These included allowing police to look for whatever they wanted in cars and homes, using the CIA for warrantless surveillance. They've extended that now to actually elected presidents even, lest the drugs supposedly being sought might be destroyed before they could be captured. The effect of all of this was to destroy a fundamental liberty in deference to easing police work. That's the definition of a police state. The courts effectively ruled that somehow the Constitution prefers liberty rather than evidence of crimes to be destroyed. The Fifth Amendment, likewise, was supposed to protect the life, liberty, and property of all persons from destruction or aggression by the government without due process of law. Due process requires a number of things, including trial by jury. Nowadays, they call it a jury trial. And remember what a jury rig trial is, folks, at which the government must prove fault. Notice the burden of proof is on the accuser, the government, to actually prove, usually beyond a reasonable doubt, but it's not even a preponderance of evidence anymore, that there really was a crime. Thus, property cannot be seized temporarily or taken permanently without either a search warrant or trial by jury. So, back to the war in Ukraine. Says Napolitano, I've argued in this column and elsewhere that the Biden regime sanctions, and he didn't spell that right, but I'll correct it, imposed on Russian and American persons and businesses are profoundly unconstitutional. He's right there. Because they are imposed by executive fiat rather than actual legislation, and because the sanctions constitute either the seizure of property without bothering with a warrant or the taking of property without due process. So when, he continues, the Fed seize a yacht from some person whom they claim may have financed Russian President Vladimir Putin's rise to power, they're doing so in direct violation of the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment. Similarly, when they freeze what they claim are Russian assets in American banks, they engage in a seizure. And seizures can only be constitutionally done with a search warrant based on probable cause of an actual crime. As well, when the Feds interfere with contract rights by prohibiting compliance with lawful contracts, that too implicates due process and can only be done constitutionally after a trial by jury renders a verdict in the favor of the government based on what? Yeah, proof at an actual trial at which the feds have proved actual fault. And as if to anticipate these constitutional roadblocks to its interference with free commercial choices, Congress enacted what was called the International Emergency Economic Powers Act of 1977 and the Magnitsky Act of 2016, which unconstitutional monstrosities, he says, purport to give the president, or whoever pretends to that office today, the power to declare persons and entities to be violators of human rights, as long, of course, as they don't pay any attention to the one they see in the mirror, and that by mere executive declaration alone, they can punish them without bothering with any of those little niceties of trial or due process. These laws turn the Fourth and Fifth Amendments on their heads by punishing first and then engaging in a perverse variant of due process later. Hey, remember how Donald Trump put it? Trying to pretend that red flag laws weren't a constitutional abomination as well? Seize the guns first, then worry about due process later. How perverse is this? These laws require that if you want your seized property back, you have to prove that you're not something. In this case, not a human rights violator. And as if to run further away from constitutional norms, says Napolitano, a group of legal academics have begun arguing last week that the property seized from Russia is not really even owned by human beings, but by the Russian government. And as this crazy argument goes, he says, since the Russian government is not a person, isn't it funny, folks? The government's only not a person when it chooses some other government not to be one. They're a person if it suits them. You can count on that. Anyway, there's therefore no warrant or due process requirement, so therefore the feds can convert the assets they've seized and frozen to, their own use. Isn't that convenient? To these communists, he says academics, but I'm going to call them what they really are, who reject the concept of property ownership as a moral right and instead exalt government aggression as a moral good, the argument devolves around the meaning of the word person. And isn't this ironic? Because you're a person when it suits them, not part of we the people, created in the image of your creator with an actual soul. And don't even try to ask them, while they'll turn right around and say, oh yeah, corporations are persons, because that suits them too, sometimes anyway. And that way the Fourth and Fifth Amendments don't merely protect every person and all people. For now, at least, they only protect Americans. And you can see where this is headed, because they haven't actually protected Americans for quite some time now. But isn't it funny? And here Napolitano notes that in American jurisprudence, the word person, and he does put it in quotes, means both human beings that have a soul and what are called artificial persons, corporations, and governments capable of owning property. And of course, let's not forget, their ownership is sometimes superior to those that actually have a soul. Property ownership is then defined by the right to use, alienate, and to exclude. Only persons, says Napolitano, can exercise those rights. So, Madison and his colleagues clearly sought to protect property rights from government aggression, no matter the legal status of the owner. We know this from the judicial opinions involving foreign property that preceded and followed the ratification of the Fifth Amendment. If this were not so, then nothing could prevent the feds from seizing and converting the property of states or local governments, which, hey, they're also persons, or international religious institutions or other corporate entities to federal use. War, he says, is the health of the state and the graveyard of liberty. The drug war was a disaster for freedom, and the war in Ukraine is certainly intended to be at least as much so. Well, that is, says Napolitano, if we permit it. And of course, if we permit them to take the guns first, folks, ironically, with a lot of these very same arguments, twisted as needed, the rest won't even matter. After all of that today, I think it's apropos and perhaps even a little bit tension-reducing to wrap up with a few things that are called a meme dump from westernrifleshooters.us. I saw it in a number of places. And a lot of this stuff is pretty cute. Some of it's almost obscene, and some of that's even funny. A lot of them you have to see the picture to really make sense of, so I'll skip over them, like the Pfizer smile. All these people that seem to have Bell's palsy. Don't you just love that Pfizer smile, it says. But if you've seen it, you kind of know what I'm talking about. How about this one? I want to thank my parents for not letting me pick my own gender while I was still eating crayons, glue, boogers, and dog food. There's a picture of a noose that says if we really want to make America great again, we have to make evil people fear punishment again. That one really does hit pretty close to home. It ought to, for sure. Here's one with a picture of what are supposed to be FBI agents dressed in their suits saying the FBI is admitting that it's really hard to solve crimes that they didn't make up. There's a picture of a dead eagle sitting in front of a bunch of windmills at a wind farm saying, if this bird was covered with oil, this picture would be everywhere. And isn't that the truth? How about this one? When someone asks me why I don't support Ukraine, there's a whole list that follows in kind of a pyramid structure. Bush supports Ukraine. Kerry supports Ukraine. Biden supports Ukraine. Soros supports Ukraine. Pelosi supports Ukraine. Hitler supports Ukraine. You can guess Obama, Macron, Trudeau, the CIA, they all support Ukraine. Romney supports Ukraine. So does Hollywood. Fact checkers support Ukraine. And finally, the media supports Ukraine. I guess the point is made. Without taxation, says one of my favorites, how would endless wars, the drug war, militarized police, the highest prison population on planet Earth, victimless laws, corporate welfare, bank bailouts, subsidies, overseas nation building, world policing, funding, training, and equipping of terrorist groups, and the NSA, and a whole bunch of other stuff, ever be funded? Well, that's funny, and we know the answer, too. They just print it. But it would be more obvious. Which leads me next, as we bring up the music, to the one that I think probably really nails it. It says this in great big white letters on a black background. You are the carbon they want to reduce. And once you understand this, you understand everything. We got time here now for one brief final story, especially if you understand everything. Courtesy of a translation from the Russian Ministry of Emergencies, which published information Thursday on their website instructing Russian citizens to prepare for, listen carefully, a retaliatory nuclear strike this Sunday, 24 April 2022, from NATO. The obvious implied question is retaliation for what? Does this mean that the Biden regime and NATO have finally succeeded in poking the bear enough that there'll be something to retaliate for? And if you remember American history, and things like Remember the Maine or Remember the Lusitania, maybe some of the buzz this week from the Moscow press, in deference to Mark Twain, at least starts to rhyme. How do you say Remember the Moskva in Russian?
Morons. I've got morons on my team.
Well, at the very least, folks, be watchful.